I'm Jared Dantzler.
And I'm Nicole Weinstock. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Paul Roland hosts Wednesday Talk Radio News and Commentary with your calls. Robert Humsiker, a journalist from Los Angeles, will be talking about the impact of climate change. At 9, on Political Perspectives, we speak with James Russell about the upcoming retirement crisis. He is the author of Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis, as tens of millions of Americans discover that they would have been better off under traditional pension plans long since replaced by 401ks. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on The Recovery Zone, hosts Stephanie Potter speaks with activists from Rising Tide and other groups. They are calling for mass actions to flood the system, to end oppression, and promote a profound social transformation. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Yesterday, Lummi Nation tribal members held an event focusing on the future of the region and the whole planet Earth in the face of unprecedented industrial assaults on land, air, water, and climate. The event features a tradition totem pole, a traditional expression of Northwest Native American culture. The totem is being used by the Lummi to bring together all those concerned about the future of this region and planet Earth in the face of unprecedented industrial assaults on land, air, water, and the climate. KBOO's Paul Roland brings us the flavor of that event. We hear from Charlie Hales and many others.
Thank you, Kate, and it's an honor for me to be part of this gathering here in this parish's sanctuary, here on Chinook land, with the leaders of the Lummi Nation and all of you who care passionately, as I do, about these issues. It has been quite a summer for me as the mayor of our city and as the mayor of a city that's one of the C40 cities around the world that have committed themselves to taking action on climate change. I was on the city council 20 years ago when Portland adopted the first United States climate action plan by an American city. And now we have brothers and sisters around the world, 70-some cities, who have committed likewise to take action. One of the things we need to do is deal with the issue of fossil fuel exports. We were confronted by this issue of Pembina, and frankly, we were caught without really coherent policy in the city. So it's time for us to look ahead and say, as a city, do we want to participate in that and write down what we believe in policy? I believe we should not participate in that. I believe that, too, and I think we have a lot of company in that belief. Right now, we generate about 540,000 kilowatt hours of power from solar on our own buildings. But we think we could multiply that by 4 pretty quickly. We own a lot of rooftops and a lot of land, some of which is not being used for buildings or parks or community gardens. So we think we could quickly go above 2 million kilowatt hours of solar power on our own land. We could be an example. We can commit to buying or generating 100% renewable power for what we use as city government. Right now, we're actually changing streetlights all over the city to light-emitting diodes, LEDs. We've already done 20,000 streetlights. It's going to avoid using a lot of power, but it's also going to save about $100,000 a year in energy costs. So there are things that we need to do as a city. And again, that was the part of the magic of this gathering, was not just that the Pope had written this amazing document and that the Vatican gathered us to share ideas and hear from him, but also that the commitment among those mayors from very diverse cities all over the world. Mayor Hidalgo from Paris was there, and of course they're hosting the climate conference in December, and her goal, and she was putting the arm on all of us, was she wants 1,000 mayors there in Paris when the leaders of the world got there. So it was so clear as soon as he began speaking to us that not only did he believe in this encyclical, but he had written it. He talked, again, so passionately about the victims of trafficking, the refugees from climate change, the refugees from war, and wove together those two themes of the life of people and the life of the planet. And he captured that dual sentiment, that dual construct so well in just a few words that I keep quoting from him. And he said, people are saying that this is an environmental encyclical. Well, of course, it is that. But it is mainly a social encyclical. We have to care about the planet that we live on and all the creatures that inhabit it. We have to care about natural systems, but we have to care about people most of all. We can indeed care better for the planet and care better for each other at the same time. And in fact, there is still time to do this, and we must do this. Thank you so much for caring.
Good evening, everyone. It's a great honor to be here. I want to start off first by thanking the leadership of the Catholic Church for hosting this event. I've been very fortunate to work with a group of Catholic leaders who helped us on another issue, the Columbia River Treaty, and their great support of getting salmon restored to our friends up in Canada past Grand Coulee Dam, which will be an amazing adventure. And so I really thank the Catholic Church for their leadership there. I also want to thank the Lummi Nation for their continuing support and leadership on this issue. They hosted a wonderful event in Seattle, brought a lot of leaders together, folks who are experts in their field, and really rallied the troops to do what we all can to stop oil and coal transportation through our communities. I want to talk a little bit about the background of tribal culture, which I think will help you in understanding why the tribes are so passionate about stopping coal and oil trains out here in the Pacific Northwest. Now, I was raised the same way many other tribes have raised their children. When the Creator put us Indians on Earth, we couldn't survive. And he asked for sacrifices to step forward and help these people. The first to step forward was the salmon, followed by the game, and then the roots and the berries. And he gave these sacrifices to us Indian people and said, I give you these sacrifices. You will survive now, but in exchange, you must take care of these first foods. And if you take care of these first foods, they will always take care of you. So if you go to any tribal event out there, you're going to see a very strong connection to these foods. Our longhouses, we set our tables up in a very specific way. First the water, then the salmon, then the game, and then the roots and the berries. We honor them through our music, through our songs, through our prayers, because we will never forget that deal we made with the Creator to always take care of our first foods. We are passionate about our Mother Earth. In fact, four tribes that I work for, Yakima, Umatilla, Warm Springs, and Nez Perce, made sure that their rights to these first foods were reserved in their treaties of 1855. That language says it right there. The right to fish and hunt in all usual and custom places in common with the citizens of the territory, as well as gathering roots and berries. Those are our first foods. Way back in 1855, the tribes wanted to make sure that they had that connection there. They clearly stated, without that language, they would not have signed those treaties. Anybody ask you, why are the tribes so passionate about the environment? That is why. And when we see these kinds of proposals to move coal trains to the Northwest, it scares us. And it should scare you too. You know, not too far from here, you just go upriver, and you're going to see a place called Columbia Hills Park. And with just a few trains per day, there's coal everywhere. It's fallen off the train tracks, right on the train tracks, right into the river. Just from a few today. And we're not even talking about yet the proposals that we're trying to combat. The one at Cherry Point, Lummi Nations leading the fight there, right in their homeland, destroy their traditional areas, destroy their fishing grounds. That proposal is for 55 to 60 trains per week. We are already seeing a disaster on the Columbia River from what is already being allowed. And that proposal, along with another one about the same size in Lower Columbia, is also scary. There's another one further upriver, Port of Morrow. Actually, the four tribes that I work for stopped that one already. I want to thank the affirmation. Working together is what takes it, is what it takes. That's the only way that we're going to stop these other proposals. Now, I can't tell you how frustrated I get when I think about what these proposals really are. These trains are coming through our fishing area. We have to cross these tracks, and it is scary. We frequently lose our tribal members just crossing the tracks to get to the fishing grounds. So there's a danger right there, but there's also this coal dust that comes off the trains, into the rivers, into our fish, into our bodies. And I just can't think of why we have to put up with all this risk. We're not getting any benefit from this. Try to talk to the folks who are proposing this. They think we're going to get some kind of benefit. We are not. We are bearing all of the risk and getting none of the benefit. This coal is going to make its way overseas or to Asian markets where it's going to get burned into coal dust. The coal dust will go into the atmosphere, blow over the oceans, back into this area. This is where that pollution ends, right here out in the Pacific Northwest. It comes down as pollution. A lot of mercury that's in our rivers right now is from this coal dust that's being burned. So there is no benefit at all for us out here in the Pacific Northwest for all this coal moving through our areas. And you know, every once in a while I hear on the news about this new technology. They say, don't worry, we've got this clean coal technology. And I have to tell you, that drives me nuts. And it should drive you nuts too. There is absolutely no way that coal can be viewed as clean. You know, out here in the Pacific Northwest, we have made great progress in bringing the salmon runs back. I never thought we'd see 2.5 million salmon come back, but we did last year. We did. Never thought I'd see it. But the fish are coming back, and it's showing that all of our hard work is paying off. We have all these federal agencies that have invested in the tribe's vision and are now threatening it with their decision-making process on what it means for just these few proposals, for coal and for oil. Now, I'm very worried. We're talking mostly about coal here, but these oil proposals are probably even more alarming. There's a large facility that's being proposed in Vancouver, Washington, just across the river from here. The largest transfer station of its kind on the continent. That's oil. And this is real. It's a different kind of oil. It's not the kind that floats on the river. You can put a boom out and catch the oil. It actually will sink. It's very thick. And if there's a train disaster, it will cause an environmental disaster for a long time. A very long time. It'll be a long time before they can clean that oil up. So both coal and oil, we need to keep our attention on both of them. I have to say that I'm also very frustrated with these kinds of proposals when we have all of this climate change to worry about. Now this year, we're seeing a taste of our future, unfortunately. We saw normal precipitation. But it came down as rain and not snow in the mountains. Very alarming. We never thought we'd see something so bad. And then it was a very hot summer. These are the kinds of projections that our scientists tell us that we're going to see at some point in the future, but we're seeing it now. Now, I hope this year isn't an anomaly, but this is what our future looks like. We can change that. We can change that as people. We can change our habits. We can stop burning fossil fuels like we are. We can stop shipping it across the ocean like we're proposing. Just leave it in the ground. That's where it belongs. Now, when you look at all of this in its totality, I have never seen anything more like an environmental injustice that's being proposed. I just haven't seen it. And this is a terrible catastrophe on its way to happen. It is not a matter of if a train will derail. It's a matter of when. And when I talk to officials about what is your plan to address this kind of a catastrophe, there really isn't one. Now, I hear from the railroad companies, they'll say they'll take full responsibility, but I didn't see it in other parts of the country. They didn't take full responsibility when people died. They didn't take full responsibility when rivers were destroyed. How can you fix that? It's impossible to take full responsibility. Their primary interest, the railroad companies at least, is to get the rails running again so they can have commerce flowing. I can guarantee you that the folks who are proposing these projects don't care either. Now, they're going to probably throw money at it and try to fix it up, but we're going to be the ones who bear that responsibility. We're going to be the ones who have to live within a legacy of contamination and pollution for decades to come. And so we have to do everything we can to stop it. Now, coal and oil, we can do that. I've seen coalitions like this form before, and they work. They really do. The environmental community, the religious community, the tribes, that's an unstoppable coalition. We need to tell the folks who are proposing this, our decision makers, that we don't want coal in our backyard. We don't want coal in our lungs, and we don't want coal in our streams or our rivers. Thank you.
And you were just listening to the Tuesday Evening News in Depth about local vigils tomorrow targeting Senator Ron Wyden. And there will be two local vigils actually tomorrow targeting Senator Ron Wyden. The vigils will be asking for Wyden's support for the deal with Iran. Senator Wyden is still on the fence about whether to support the deal. There are over 200 such vigils taking place nationwide on Wednesday, August 26th in Portland. And in Portland, a vigil will take place at noon at Senator Wyden's office at 911 Northeast 11th Street. And in Beaverton, there will be a vigil at 5 p.m. on Wednesday at Southwest 5th and Hall across